Especially, I feel like this morning, and the prayer and the table, it's all been uplifting, and that's what we're supposed to be doing, things that uplift the church when we assemble together. Tonight at 7:15 in the fellowship hall, all of you who have been wanting to get into the live sessions and have not done it are invited to meet there at 7:15 and to be given an opportunity to sign up, to enlist, to get into one of these life sessions. If you don't know what a life session is, it's a small group of Christians. I started to say it's a group of small Christians. It's a small group of Christians meeting. They meet about 24 different places all over the city for fellowship and for fun and for encouragement. It's a time to kind of get aside and to be with each other on a more personal basis. We eat together. We sometimes have Christmas dinner together. Sometimes we have hobo chili together. You just name it. Other groups ride trail bikes. You mean in a life session? Yep, that's kind of a life or death session. But we have things that are just good going on. If you want to be a part, please meet tonight at 7:15 in the fellowship hall and get signed up for this semester. Old and young alike, we hope you'll be there. Do we have to choose between Jerry and Jimmy going to Africa? I maintain we ought to just go ahead and send them both. The Africans probably would have something to say about that. But we do need someone to go as an experienced Bible teacher. Please get in touch with Dr. Benson if you would like to do that and fit into that work for a while. There's one character mentioned in the New Testament only three times, and yet we're familiar with him. But his name leaves kind of a bad taste in our mouth. Kind of like the name Jezebel has become synonymous with hussy, and the name Judas has come to mean traitor. So the name Demas has come to mean deserter. And no one wants to name his child Demas, nor Judas, nor Jezebel. This man, Demas, had so much going for him in the beginning, and yet he had such a bad ending. There are three times, as I say, that his name is mentioned, and his name is only mentioned. Philemon, the 24th verse, mentions that he is one of Paul's fellow workers. A great beginning. But then in Colossians 4:14, it just mentions him as Demas, with no other description of the man. He's listed among eight fellow workers of Paul, and all of the other seven have something commendable said about them, but not Demas. And in that particular verse, he's mentioned last. All the other seven are stated as being co-workers or as being working hard or as being co-workers or fellow prisoners with Paul. But when it just came down to final, the last one, Paul just simply calls him Demas. And then in Titus, or in 2 Timothy rather, 4 and verse 10, Paul there says, Demas, in love with this present world, has forsaken me and has gone to Thessalonica. Notice this progression. Demas, my fellow worker. Demas. And Demas has deserted me. Demas was a man who had such good beginnings but had such poor endings. And what a privileged beginning he had to be a co-worker with the Apostle Paul. Not many people shared that privilege. Not that Paul was exclusive, but simply that not everyone could share that privilege. But Demas did. He's like the man, though, that began to build the house and couldn't finish. Jesus told about him in Luke. The man that laid the foundation but was not able to complete the house. And it's interesting, and it makes you wonder, Luke and Demas are mentioned together in the two times that Paul mentions them here where Demas was with Paul. Both times when Demas was with Paul's company, Demas is mentioned in conjunction with Luke. They're always together. Either Luke is mentioned first and then Demas, or Demas is mentioned first and then Luke. But they're both together. It seems as though they may have been companions as they were sent out by twos. Demas and Luke may have been together. They are mentioned together. And it's interesting to notice that it is Luke and Luke alone of the gospel writers that records the parable of Jesus about the man that began to build the house and couldn't finish it. I wonder if that has any implications. I wonder perhaps if Luke saw Demas and watched him as he began to take step by step in the wrong direction. And then when Luke came across this parable of the Lord, he thought of Demas and included that in the gospel as a warning. Be careful. It makes you wonder. I think it's appropriate for us here in this community at this time to study about this man who had such good beginnings but such a poor ending. For one reason, it's the new year, a time for new beginnings, a time when resolutions are set starkly and resolutely in front of us, and we look for an opportunity chronologically to make new beginnings, to new semester. We've got new books, we've got new notebooks, and everything is ready to go, a good beginning. And yet in another way, it's appropriate that we in this community study this man because we have for years stressed the gospel of good beginnings. This community is based upon the theory of good beginnings, and it's a good theory. It's a commendable effort. How often and how strongly we've stressed the good beginnings that our children need. And many of you have moved into this community in order to give your children the beginning that they deserve. You want them to have a good beginning in their association with Christian education. That you want that as the foundation for their life, and that's a noble aspiration. Many of you are sacrificing significantly that your children might enjoy that Christian education. And there are lots of you, and I see you more and more, who have started that way back yonder years ago, and you've seen it through. You've seen all of your children go through the Christian education afforded in this community. And you've seen it through. You've come out on the other end and said it was worth it. I'd do it again. And so I commend you. And yet in this assembly I know that there are also Demases. There are those of us who will not make it through either that effort or other noble efforts. There are those who will fall by the wayside. Not so much that they have found another more noble goal as that they have succumbed to a less noble one and have just fallen away. And all of us possess in us the possibility of that. Demas lies dormant in all our breasts. Because there are those dark, destructive forces that are always working in us to destroy us and to pull us down and to detour us and to sidetrack us and to get us to chasing after butterflies while things of real importance flit away from us and pass us by. We're all victims of that. And so I'd like to notice with you this morning very briefly some things that will help you get through life. I'd like to urge you to think seriously about three things that will help you see it through and see life through to the end, to where you can come out the victor, because it's going to not just happen by chance. You're going to have to take it in hand and do something with a decision. One of these things that I'm convinced helps us to see it through is that of a good conscience. Staying power, and we're going to call it staying power, the ability to stick in there with it. Staying power is always associated with a good conscience. Always. I maintain that you'll never, ever come out on the end of anything noble and good without maintaining in the process a good conscience. You foul up your conscience and you'll be led astray. Foul up your conscience and you'll revise your theology. Foul up your conscience and you'll excuse your actions. Foul up your conscience and you'll not get to the end with the victory. The Apostle Paul was very convinced of this. And he urged Timothy to give attention to having a good conscience. He said, "This is the end of our charge. Love out of a pure heart, a good conscience, and genuine faith." That's 1 Timothy 1:5. And then in verses 18 and 19, he also talks about the charge again and says, Timothy, I charge you, my son, according to the prophecies that led the way to you, that you may wage the good warfare, holding faith and a good conscience. And then listen to him again. By rejecting conscience, certain persons have made shipwreck of their faith. And Paul could probably point out certain ones, and Demas was among those, and he could point to these shipwrecked hulls lying on the shores of time, and he could point over there and say that was because the man rejected conscience. And here was another one that didn't listen to his conscience. Here's a young lady who refused to listen to her conscience. And there's a young man who made shipwreck because he didn't listen to his conscience. He names two of them by name in that passage there in 1 Timothy. But notice, if you will, there is a progression. Just in passing, I want you to notice a progression of apostasy. And it starts with knowledge, to which all of us have access. And then it begins next and continues with sin, to which all of us are subject, and we're all victims of it. And then there's a third thing that comes in this progress of apostasy, and that's conscience. But the progress of apostasy doesn't involve just conscience. It involves rejected conscience. As certainly as we all come to knowledge, we all come into sin, we all come to be convicted of our conscience. But the point is that if you ever reject your conscience, then the next step is depression, which leads then to inertia, which leads then to apostasy. You just finally give up. There's no hope. What's the point? And so this progression of apostasy begins with knowledge, and you and I, we're high on that, and our knowledge ratio would be exceedingly high here. And then into sin, yes, we all sin. But then what do you do when your conscience pricks you? Paul says you better maintain a good conscience. Whatever else is necessary in getting you on through life, you better live true to yourself. You better live true to what you know is right, to the best of your ability. You cannot afford to be an inward failure. You know, just here, and I thought about this morning. I counsel people who take drugs. I counsel young people who smoke pot. And there's something inherent within pot smoking and within marijuana usage. There's something inherent within there that robs a person of his willpower. I know that. That's clinically been established. But for the Christian who does that, it packs a double wallop. Because not only do you have the chemical effect of the marijuana on your senses that seem to dull and seem to rob you of initiative and to infect you with inertia, not only do you have the chemical effect, I believe the Christian who uses drugs or who uses these things that I've mentioned, that Christian who uses them is guilty of something that is such a compounding problem, and it causes his dilemma, and it causes his inertia to not just be chemical, it causes his inertia and his depression to be spiritual and emotional as well. Because the Christian young person who uses drugs is violating his conscience. He knows full well that he's not doing himself right. You know that. And there are those of you who are hearing me this morning who will this week probably be tempted to take drugs. Think about it. And that inertia that seems to invade the lives of those of you who do that, that cause you to not to want to go to class, not to want to get your lessons, not to want to be associated with other people, to just want to lie in the bed, to sleep it off, to just kind of be sacked out all the time. Much of that is caused because of the progression of apostasy that has come about because of a neglected, abused conscience that leads to depression, to inertia, and then just finally drop out. Let those of us who would like to see it through the end remember this one very important principle. It will never happen unless you take good care of your conscience. But there's something else, a second principle I'd like to mention, and that is seeing it through or staying power is always associated with being captured by a cause. Boy, this is so important, and it's so simple. Seeing it through or staying power is always associated with being captured by a cause, being laid hold on by some great cause greater than yourself to which you're more than willing to give your entire self without reservation, without any compromise at all. It just seems to kind of suck you along by the force of itself. You know, I'm not strong enough to maintain a right life by my own strength. I can't do it. I've already learned that. I have to kind of get in behind. You know, when a car racing with another car, they can fall in behind one another and kind of get pulled into the suction of that car ahead of them. That's kind of the way I have to live my life. I've had to determine and find me a cause that captivates me. I've had to find a cause that captivates me in order for me to be motivated to do what I ought to do and to be what I ought to be. Jesus Christ is that cause for me. But that was Jesus' secret also. Jesus said, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me. My drink, my life, my breath. He was just simply saying, my very existence is to do the will of my Father who sent me. And in John 2, he says, the disciples remembered what he did in the temple, and they said, it reminded them of the statement, zeal for thy house shall eat me up. And they thought about Jesus when they saw the way he was conducting himself. That was Jesus' secret. Well, you know the same thing in your own house. You know the same thing in your own life. Life is like that. You're about like me. You don't have what it takes either. You're going to have to find some cause that captivates you, some cause that dominates you, some cause that absolutely consumes you to where you find yourself being pulled along by the great force of that higher cause, higher than yourself. How many of you know the discouragement and the frustration of an undetermined major? That freshmen don't know, they don't know what you're talking about. They don't know much about what you're talking about, period, but they'll learn, they've made a good beginning, and they'll learn if they don't flake out, you know, and fail before the end of it. But those of you who get to be juniors and seniors, you know how frustrating it is not to have determined your major? And you say to him, what are you majored in? Well, I don't know. You say, you don't know? Man, this is second semester senior year. And something that's just about as bad as that is to have seized on a major that doesn't seize you back. To grab a major that doesn't have any grabbing power. And you've decided, and you've majored all the way along in this thing, and yet it doesn't have any grabbing power. Well, that's terribly frustrating. And I'll tell you what, if you go on past your BA work, and you go into your master's work, and you write a thesis, let me tell you something real quick. When you write that thesis, as you choose your subject, you better choose a good one. Choose one that's got some grabbing power, because if you grab one that doesn't grab you back, I guarantee you, you'll discard it way before you get through with it. Because by the time you've been discarded and corrected and torn up about 15 times by your chairman of your committee, you're going to tell him, look, forget it. I'm not going through that anymore. You can have it. I wouldn't do it. I know you'll do that. I did that. If it hadn't been for the fact that I had a theme that was so challenging, I never would have finished it at all. What about a job? Those of us in the resident community here, we've got jobs and jobs. And there are two kinds of jobs. There are jobs that are just jobs. And I doubt that you'll stay with them very long. And then there are those jobs that get you out of the bed in the morning with a zip in your step. And those jobs that do during the night, you'll be thinking about them and you'll be so excited that you'll be planning for far in advance in order to do this job. And it gets you up with a whistle in the morning and sends you off with a zing in your step. That's the kind of job you better latch on to also, or else you won't last very long. You'll be changing and you'll have about 10 jobs in as many years. And, well, I did this back then, and then I'm doing that, and now I'm doing that. And, well, what's the matter? He never has been seized on by a thing that was higher than himself. That's one of the main things in life that you've got to seize on, is something that seizes you back. I was out in Phoenix, Arizona yesterday talking with a man there, and he was so excited about his own son who had been in college for years and never had found anything that challenged him. Brilliant boy. He could be straight A's, and he is going to be, because his daddy said he finally has found his niche. He said he took the aptitude test and found out that in the area of electronics and data processing, he said he just blew the test clear out the window. And he said he's so excited he doesn't know what to do. That's what happens when you get a hold of something that grabs you back. The excitement of it that carries you through to the end. Well, you know, life as a whole is no different than that. Life as a whole is no different from your experience in college. You've got to have something here to carry you through to the end, something greater than yourself. You've got to have something greater than in life than just a job that's a job. You've got to have something that challenges you if you go on through to the end. But life like that, our life as a whole is like that. Look, if you will, draw the contrast between Demas here in 2 Timothy 4, where it says, Demas in love with the present world has forsaken me. Look over then into Hebrews, the 11th chapter, quickly, and look at verses 13 through 16. Turn in your Bibles now to Hebrews 11, 13 through 16, and watch the difference between these two men. What a difference it is. Verse 13 through 16 says, these all died in faith, not having received what was promised, but having seen it and greeted it from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak like this make it clear that they're seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God's not ashamed to be called their God, for he's prepared for them a city. What a difference there is between those people and Demas. Demas, it said, having loved the present world. The word, the emphasis there is on present. God loves the world. Demas loved the present world. He loved that which was passing away. If you love your body or if you love your flesh to the extent that you shouldn't, it's going to wrinkle. If you love possessions, they're going to rot. If you love houses, they're going to deteriorate and decay. Whatever you love that's just present, it's not sufficient to take you through life and bring you out on the other side the victor. When I was a young boy, about 10 or 12 years of age, I used to build airplanes, and I had it as such an all-consuming desire. I just built them all the time. I wouldn't even get one finished before I'd be going and buying another one. But you know, I haven't built an airplane in years. I've just almost quit altogether. Why? Well, because that's not sufficiently high to carry me through life. You know, a 46-year-old man just doesn't go around building model airplanes. In fact, you'd think I was crazy if I did. It's just not sufficient. You've got to have a staying power that accompanies a cause that's so commanding and a cause that is so sublime that it just kind of just sucks you along with it. And by the way, here you go. Not on your own power. You've been captivated by something that's higher than yourself. Well, finally, the third thing is that staying power is always associated with an abiding trust in God and in his faithfulness that he'll bring you through out of the storm into the calm. That's got to be there. I don't care how many times you may find the cause, and I don't care how often you may keep your conscience clean or how perfectly you may keep it clean. There are going to be those times when you're just simply going to be flat of your back and you're not going to have anywhere else to turn, and you're going to have to just say, Lord, if it's ever to be done, you're going to have to do it. I can't do it. Everybody has to have a time when he scotches his wheels. I said this at the first hour and told about how older people who used to drive horse and buggies or horses and wagons with heavy loads, how that there would be these hills that you'd be going up, and your wheels might be greased, and the load might be strapped on tight, and the horses were hooked up, and you were going up that hill. But the time comes, by the way, about halfway up some of those hills, you had to get out and scotch that wheel and let those horses rest. After we were dismissed, Dr. Benson came up and said, I want to correct that, or I want to alter it just a bit. He said, let me tell you something. When you're going up one of those hills, and that load is on the wagon, and the horses are pulling, and they get tired, you don't wait and turn loose of those horses and go look for a rock. He said, if you do, you'll end up with the horses and the wagon and the load down at the end of that hill. That's right. You don't look for a rock. You have it ready. Now, that says something. And that's what I find in David's life. David is one of the most... He got in more trouble than any man I think I've ever read about. He was forever complaining and ever groaning and talking to the Lord about all the people that were chasing him and trying to kill him. I never knew a man that had as many enemies. I don't think I've ever known a man that had any more enemies inside him. David was also afflicted by inward enemies. You know what David did when he was faced with all these threats, both inside and outside? David scotched his wheels. And he just simply called on the Lord. Listen to this statement. Turn with me to Psalms as we close. I want to leave these thoughts with you. Psalms, the 56th chapter. Listen to this beautiful statement. It's just so great. Listen, 56 verses 3 and 4 and about 8 through 9. When I'm afraid, I put my trust in Thee. In God whose word I praise, in God I trust without a fear, what can flesh do to me? That's so beautiful when I'm afraid to put my trust in Thee. But look over at verse 8. Thou hast kept count of my tossings. He couldn't sleep. Put Thou my tears in Thy bottle. Are they not in Thy book? Then my enemies will be turned back in the day when I call. Listen to this next statement. This I know, that God is for me. This I know, that God is for me. You don't go looking for a rock. You don't turn loose of your horses and go looking for a rock. David, in the midst of all of this, he turned to the Lord and he said, I know this. God is for me. Do you know that in your life? If you'd be brought through the victor, you're going to have to know something. You're going to have to know that God's for you. That song we often sing, Be Still, My Soul. The Lord is on thy side. Bear patiently the cross of grief and pain. Oh, that says so much. That's what we're talking about. That in the midst of the storm, you've got to have that deep abiding faith in the faithful, or the trust in the faithfulness of God in order to be brought through on the other side as the victor. Look at Psalms 59. There's another passage there. Verses 16 and 17. I will sing of thy might. I will sing aloud of thy steadfast love in the morning. For thou hast been to me a fortress and a refuge in the day of my distress. O my strength, I will sing praises to thee. For thou, O God, art my fortress, the God who shows me steadfast love. David's God was his rock. It was his fortress, his supplier, his protector. All of these things, his forgiver, his redeemer, all of these things, God was to David. That's what he's going to have to be to you if you make it through. Look over at chapter 69 and watch. Things were getting pretty bleak for David here. And he turned when the water was coming up to his nose. He couldn't find any place to stand. It says, Save me, O God. Verse 1 there. Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink deep in mire where there is no foothold. I've come into deep waters, and the flood sweeps over me. I'm weary with my crying. My throat is parched. My eyes grow dim with waiting for my God. And that's when he always cried out, O God, help me. So I say that those of you who would want staying power in this year, and those of you who have made good beginnings, and I want to congratulate you because you have made good beginnings. In fact, everybody here, I suspect, could say simply, I have made a good beginning. Let me just simply urge you, if you've made a good beginning and your presence here indicates that, would you then take these three thoughts as means by which you can come through and see it through to the end? Keep a good conscience. Lay hold on a cause that will lay hold on you, that's bigger than yourself, to which you're more than willing to give your entire self. And then trust in the faithfulness of God to pull you through those dark hours. Listen to me. There'll be some of you today here with your mate who will not see the end of 1980 before your mate is taken away from you. What are you going to do then? Will it bring you through or will it put you under? You've got to learn to trust in those times. I long to say with Paul, I have finished my course. And that's one of the most beautiful passages. If I can just finally one day say that, I have finished my course. If I can say with Jesus, it is finished. And if I can say with David, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I long to be able to say that God has brought me through. And I know you do too. Today, we're going to sing a song of encouragement. And it is a great song of encouragement. I heard the voice of Jesus say, that's come unto me and rest. If you've made this good beginning, go ahead and follow through on it, and let's encourage one another. There may be somebody here today that wants to become a Christian and start out in that good way. If you do believe in Jesus that way and want to become his follower, then come and confess that faith, and we'll immerse you in water. That's the new beginning as you're raised to walk a new life, and then you can also be brought through in victory. Or if you need some other help or some assistance as a Christian, we want you to encourage one another and be encouraged while we stand and sing.